Well, it's a dynamic duo, we'll be back again. Nothing back with DJ, you better pack it in. You're lacking sense, trying to tangle with us. Go with the big black bullies in the back of the bus. Just smacking you up, and stealing your lunch money. You're such a buddy, you feel just a touch. Only by the end of the day, that's understandable. What can I say? You got strong man to be.
Gary has absolutely no idea what has happened to it. Still doesn't know.
That's better.
That's pretty.
Is it? Is it really?
I mean, it's got bendy wavy stuff.
Oh, hang on. I've got an alert.
That's good. Everybody needs alerts. Very, what? Very old Spike Milligan joke.
Where shall we begin with the world of sport this week? I actually, every time I get sucked into the Olympics, there's always something that I enjoy.
Is it just unguarded nationalism or?
No.
Finding a reason to hate the Seppos?
Yeah, that's always
going to suck. I mean, finding a reason's a bit redundant, isn't it? How long you got? Just like,
no, it's the sports that I would probably watch if they were on, like, to be honest, if I could find, you know, 1500, 5K, 10K racing on YouTube in the whatever,
Diamond League or whatever. I'm pretty sure that's on KO.
Is it on KO? Oh,
I would have thought so.
I just find it fascinating, the tactics and the difference between the tactics in like a Diamond League race where they essentially run like Formula One teams and, you know, they can have paces and teammates can do things for them compared to the Olympics where it's like, nah, fuck you. we're all out for a medal and there's no tactics and you don't have like four runners that you can just burn off holding a pacer sort of thing.
See, you've been dissing my interest in watching 220 kilometers stages of Tour de France. You're describing exactly the conflict between professional cycling and world championship / Olympics level cycling.
Yeah. I guess the difference is
except it happens faster and you see more scenery.
I can run and I can't ride. What? I think that's essentially what it comes down to.
They never let you take the training wheels off?
No, I just...
You do live on the top of an extremely steep hill.
Yeah.
Like you would be you'd become an excellent descender. You'd become the fucking Vincenzo Nibali of North Beanley.
Or I would become an excellent climber just because I'd have to get home.
You'd end up being whippet thin and the bones out of your ass just sticking out the back of the lycra.
So I've been watching that. I've been watching a lot of Olympic basketball, and I have to say we're going to finish fourth again.
Yep.
Because we're going to face...
Just like the Matildas.
We're going to face a pissed off Luka Doncic, and that isn't going to go well for anyone.
And his pointless ISOing is going to work a lot better than Australia's pointless ISOing.
Yeah, I've been making Tibbs jokes all week because...
Well, literally, the subject, the title of the recording is What's Ice at Australian? All right, stop, collaborate and listen.
I just
rolling in my 5.0 VB Commodore.
I don't understand when your best player is like 6 foot flat and on the bench for the Spurs and the Spurs coach is going to be coaching against you.
On the bench for the Nets.
On the bench for the Nets.
Future world champion Nets.
Oh, he'll go awesome there.
We'll get to all the free agent shenanigans a bit later in the program.
But like, you are going to have a secondary ball like creator at some stage if you get to this stage. And they were pretty confident they were going to get to this stage. And they got to this stage and were like, Joe Ingles, do you want to create against some of the best defenders in the world? No? Okay. Well, I guess we'll just throw up random shots then. Our defense was great. Really pushed them quite hard. And if they hadn't have had Durant in that first half, they might have shit the bed. But man, their lack of a secondary attacking plan was just woeful.
Yeah, but where else were you going to find that second playmaker? Who was that going to be? I mean, Dante was just not quite... He was decent in that first half. He's not there yet. He's not back yet.
But my thing with that is if you're the underdog, right, if you're the absolute... you know you're going to be the underdog, why bring four centers? Why not take a chance on Giddy, who's a playmaker, or another young guy who's a playmaker.
Really didn't use Giddy at all, did he? It was
he wasn't in the squad. He was in the extended squad.
I thought they were going to activate him. I really did.
An injury reserve, but they just needed someone that could create something.
Just create their own shot.
And Dele, like every time he touched the ball, it was like, well, he can't attack and he's lost a step in defense. So, can he do his, you know, senior player for the team stuff from the bench? Like, that just baffled me every time he was on the floor. So, it was frustrating. But
you ran into the team with the most talent by orders of magnitude than anyone else in the comp. And it turns out eventually they could figure out how to play under FIFA ball rules. Weird.
Yeah.
I mean, it was always going to end like this. I mean, they're not bad enough and they're not disorganized and undedicated enough to just let this slide. Durant by himself is enough to win a Olympic gold.
And I think the thing before when they had lost in previous iterations where they had Marbury and those sort of players, like it was the selfishness. And these guys aren't selfish.
No.
Like they might be tired and they might not really have played together that much. And that shows like it takes – but they've still got Devin Booker and Drew Holiday still one of the best defenders in the fucking world and Durant is still an alien. Like yeah, well, what can you do? I wasn't upset that we lost. I was more upset that we...
Oh, fuck off, you weren't upset that you lost.
I was upset at the time.
I can pull the receipts from the podcast Twitter account because, of course, you know, you seem to save this for the podcast Twitter account.
I think it's funnier from the podcast Twitter account.
People who know you in person.
Which is mostly like this detached cynicism, and then every now and again I get on there and go, what are you like, doing, Gorge? Like,
it's very, very specific fucking, very specific tweets about very specific things.
No, like the other thing I was talking to Wheatman about this is this is not Spain where you look at that team and you're like, well, fuck, we might never be this good for a long time. You know, they haven't got that next generation coming through. The bones of the team that will be there in the next Olympics are still going to be really good. You know, Exum and Green and Tybal and Giddy, even Sobey, the guy that got picked up by the Spurs is only 25.
The center, Jock Landau.
Jock Landau. So
I felt like that was just Pop trying to psych out the opponent on the morning. He'll probably just play him in two games and cut him in summer league.
Look, he actually probably suits an NBA game more than a FIBA game because he's got a good three ball and you know, doesn't mind being stretched out onto the perimeter a bit. You know, banging with those guys. And the other thing I really enjoyed was just watching Lewis Scola run around at, 42 or something and still playing.
Run is generous.
20 minutes a game and averaged 12 points.
Look, it's been a big week for really, really old people. I mean, I give you the Lakers starting lineup for 2022. And also the retirement of the incomparable Valentino Rossi, which we might get to a little bit later on as well, because I'll make sure we crowbar it in at the end somewhere. But old people, still good at things.
So I was thinking about the coverage of free agency / the draft, right? And I find it really weird that everyone's got the Lakers as favorite. And I understand they got LeBron and AD.
Nobody's got the Lakers as favorites. What the fuck are you reading?
The betting things have them as favorite in the West.
Yeah, but that's related to the market. That's because so many people bet on the fucking Lakers. They're trying to get their money.
I think...
the whole point of a betting market is you scale it to the... You don't just have which team is going to win. You have, how can I make sure all these people who are going to bet on this one team don't take our money?
But like even the narrative has been the Lakers are going to do really well. And it's like,
I mean, yeah, sure.
And then the other one is,
I have to say, I like their second and third day a lot more than their first day.
Yes,
I like Taylor Horton Tucker. I liked Kendrick Nunn.
Monk.
I liked Monk. I liked I like Melo. That was Melo still got stuff in a way that Trevor Ariza might not. But the thing about getting all those really old guys, I mean, they've got Wayne Ellington, they've got Dwight Howard, bringing back a lot of guys who've been with the Lakers before, even back in the Kobe era. These guys are going to be cool with never seeing the fucking ball. And that's the thing. If you've got young blokes, Kuz was an issue because Kuz needed the ball to go and do stuff, and he never got the fucking ball with that, with LeBron and AD. And with the old dudes, they know to stand in the corner, wait their turn, fit in where they fit in, and get that ring and move on. Whereas, you know, there is an advantage to chasing old guys. Also, old guys are cheap, which is why I'm drinking two straight.
There is one exception to that rule, though, and it's the guy who's you know, had the highest usage rate in the league for the last 10 years. And it's like this trick. It's some real Kaiser Soze shit. Like, everyone's like, oh, LeBron's going to be able to convince him to cut on and play off the ball. It's like, no, he's played with Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal and James Harden. And
he's not there to do that. He's there to cover the games that LeBron can't be asked playing. I mean, I don't think there's going to be a lot of LeBron-Russ time. I think it'll be surprisingly little for an all-star pairing. I think they're going to be very, very they're not going to be on the court together.
You can't give them both 30% usage rate separate to each other in the finals.
What makes you think Russell Westbrook's going to be playing down the stretch in the finals? If you're looking at his career, where has he ever been an efficient, effective player? And given that he's at the end of his career and you know, essentially at the end of the bench, he might not even be in the fucking rotation at that stage. He might be injured. Or he might reinvent himself because he knows, he's a California guy. He was a UCLA guy. He might realize, oh shit, this is my chance to win shit.
Yeah, it might be. And the other one that I found fascinating was the narrative around New York and Chicago, right? Because everyone was like, oh, the Knicks are back. They've got Kemba Walker.
Where the fuck narrative are you hearing that from? I haven't heard that from anybody. All I heard was the Knicks are a fucking, have re-signed all the people that got them to be a first round knockout. Guess what they're going to be this year? A first round knockout. And then they got, to their credit, they picked up Kemba Walker for fuck all.
Nothing, yeah.
And remember last week when you were telling me Kemba Walker was going to be the reason that OKC was a good place for Josh Giddey to go. I mean, Kemba Walker's, at least they've got a starting point guard who's not Derrick Rose. He might have the same knees as Derrick Rose, but he's not Derrick Rose.
And then the flip side is, you know, Chicago got DeMar DeRozan, and you look at DeRozan's actual stats from the last sort of 3 years, and he's just a really solid player who doesn't miss games and, you know, gets X amount of assists and X amount of points every fucking game. Like, he is the player that the Knicks really should have fucking gone for if they wanted to win more games.
How much fucking money did DeMar DeRozan get?
That's right.
That's the problem. DeMar DeRozan, and it was interesting to see all the discourse around Chicago in the first day or so was all quite positive. It was, oh, look, they picked up Lonzo Ball and they re-signed this guy and they got that guy. It's like, oh, this is all lovely. And then suddenly there's this enormous deal for DeMar DeRozan and all these people are saying, can I take back whatever piece I've written about Chicago because this is where it's all gone. This is where it's all gone horribly wrong. I don't think it's quite. I think there's an industry and an economy in having strident takes about immediate events that are immediately forgotten, you know, as time moves on. And a lot of these people would do in the instant reaction game. They were massively positively overreacting to Chicago's day one, massively negatively overreacting to Chicago's day two. I think the net result is that they're a better team than they were this time last year. Now, whoever wants to pay for it is quite interesting. But I'm interested in Chicago as a free agent destination is much more prominent than it was this time last year, this time the year before. And I wonder what the effect is there. Is that the front office is no longer Muppets? Or is that all these kids watched The Last Dance and thought, oh, that Bulls jersey looks really cool, I might go there?
Could be a bit of column A and a bit of column B. I think the fact that they changed their front office and they're already first 1 year in and they're into the luxury tax and everyone's like, holy shit, you know, Chicago never goes into the luxury tax. The other interesting one is are they going to do an OKC thing and play three guards? Because they've got four good guards now. They can't play all of them all of the time. So are they going to play like three guard lineups and try and replicate that real fast-paced OKC style that Donovan played the last year he had Chris Paul? Or are they going to trade Zach LaVine so someone else has to pay him $200 million?
Weirdly, they don't seem too concerned about the money at the moment in Chicago, whereas they always have been in the past. I mean, infamously, yeah, that ownership group have been. I mean, that's the whole fucking plot of the Last Dance, is that the owners of the Chicago Bulls are too cheap to go around again with this shit.
Yeah, that's true. So maybe it's a little bit of PR. Who else was interesting in free agency?
You're asking me? How the fuck would I know? It was, I mean, the first big move of free agency was Kyle Lowry to the Miamis.
Who then paid everybody lots of fucking money in the team as well. Robinson almost, got money.
Has anybody explained to Mickey Arison that the cruise business is actually really bad at the moment? Because he seems to be more than happy to spend a lot of money. They even brought back Depot on a fucking prove-it deal, which is fair enough. I think that they kind of have to, because they traded a bunch of stuff to get him and, you know, give him an opportunity to come back.
Yeah, and, like, they've got enough guards, and, like, if he comes back and pops, then holy shit, they'll be a hard team to beat. And if he doesn't, well, you know, they haven't dropped much money on it, so.
Yeah, they gave a lot of money to Duncan Robinson. They got, like, 5 years, $90 million. But then again, if he plays like he played in the bubble, which is no guarantee.
Shooting pays.
You know, you put shooters around Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry. There was always a lot of talk that DeMar DeRozan would go there, but I don't think the money was ever going to make sense. It was interesting. I was going to characterize this free agency period as anything. It was the time in which we saw how the sausage was made. We saw the fucking strings on the puppet. We saw how Woj does what Woj does, because every tweet he made, there was clear who'd fed him the fucking line and what the quid pro quo was. Because with Duncan Robinson with the tweet that said he got $590, in the tweet, he actually referenced Duncan Robinson's podcast and his agents. And you think, gee, I wonder who gave you this tweet. I wonder what they told you to promote. It was just so pathetic and transparent. But you wonder whether Woj is just now just taking the piss. He's like, look, I'm fucking. He got cooked by Shams the whole time. It was fucking hilarious. But the dude
probably hasn't slept in a month. He's probably a little bit tired.
Yeah, possibly. I made a list of the most on brand signings, and I think Doug McDermott and Zach Collins to the Spurs. Extremely on brand. TJ McConnell to the Pacers, or being, you know, being re-upped by the Pacers. Incredibly on brand. Yeah, Denver signing all the players called Green. Incredibly on brand, because there's nothing like greening out in Denver. And Lakers signing all the fucking the rest home inhabitants was extremely on brand. But I mean, Fever Patty to the Nets. That's, you know, shouts to Sean Marks. Obviously, they finally let him make a decision instead of just telling them what to do. But yeah, that was kind of cool.
Even they got Blake back on the minimum.
Like, they did, but
that Blake, side is fucking Blake's, loaded.
Blake's only worth the minimum. Let's face it; he's not too far away from being Andre Drummond, who has gone to. Oh fuck! I'm blanking.
The Sixers.
That's the right. Sixers. He is now Dwight Howard. He's got the Dwight Howard position. It's almost like there's like an interchange of all these washed centers of 2012, like Andre Drummond and Dwight Howard, and all these guys are just being rotated amongst each other. What the fuck are the New Orleans Pelicans doing?
I feel like all my optimism about Griffin is just being slowly ebbed away.
Like I fucking messaged you, it's made me revisit those, you know, that late, you know, the LeBron Cavs era where they would get some shambles together bunch of random fucking expendables free agents at the trade deadline, and LeBron would smash them together into a team and either win or not. And LeBron always took a lot of heat for that, like it was all of his. I wonder how much of that was just David Griffin not being very good at finding people.
Yeah, well, he doesn't have an ownership group that constantly interferes to to blame it on anymore.
Absolutely not. They are much more focused on mismanaging the New Orleans Saints than to be worried about the New Orleans Pelicans.
And it's looking more and more like Zion's going to be the first rookie to take the qualifying offer and go, you know, I can go to Golden State or the Lakers or New York or, you know, one of the big franchises and make my money back within a year.
As he fucking should, because he's being the system whereby you get sent to the worst teams in the league if you're the biggest, you know, the best young star with the greatest potential is inherently, it's equal, you know, it's socialism for the teams, but it's massively unequal for the labor. They can't define where they want to go and what their careers are going to be. So, you know, anything that fights against that system is entirely fair enough. I'm not all about here to have super teams and shit like that. But if you run a team incredibly badly, you don't deserve to keep a great prospect for 7 years. You don't deserve that.
And for all that Houston's got a fucking absolute fuckwit owner, if you look at their front office, they've done pretty good in this offseason. Like, they've put a whole bunch of young guys and bit parts around that at least has a chance to build into a sustainable team. And why the fuck would you let Lonzo walk? He's a restricted free agent. He's had two seasons of shooting 38, 40% from three. That's exactly what you need to put around Zion. Why would you let that guy go? I don't understand. That's what just doesn't make sense. Even if Lonzo's unhappy, he's a restricted free agent. Just pay him whatever his offer sheet was. And if he can't work it out after a year, and
do you feel like that it might not be Lonzo who was unhappy though? I mean, the counter example might be that Griff is now in thrall to another superstar, and he's doing whatever he can to please that superstar. And these might all be Zion's bad ideas. But I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. So evidently, Lonzo and Zion were tight, and he wasn't particularly – he's even unhappier now than he was before all this happened.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that.
I guess the league's always got to have a bad side that you can dump your shit on, and New Orleans seems to be it. So.
Well, yeah, now that the Knicks are competent?
Reasonably competent. Well, I don't know whether –
treading water. I think
Fournier's contract does not look that fucking flash, man.
I don't know, man. Where is his team currently playing in the Olympics? And yeah, is he the only decent player on that team?
No.
He's the fucking Luka Doncic of that team. Everything runs through him on that French team.
Yeah, not the game. I watched the quarter against –
who else is out there? Fucking Nando De Colo, who I genuinely thought was Argentinian.
Oh, no, Gobert was carving it up. And who's the other guy?
Quarto was against Spain, wasn't it? And their bigs are the Gasol brothers, who are 1,000 years old.
1,000 years old. No, the other good NBA player. Fuck.
Nick Batum.
Batum had a really good game that game.
He's gone back to the Clippers, I think. He got re-signed. Yep. Most people stayed home. You know, it was the COVID free agency period where most people just got paid to stay home, except if you're in Australia, of course, whereby you get tweeted at that, you know, it's not essential to be able to eat or fix your water pump. Shouts to our motorsport correspondent.
I am going to watch a little bit of NBL this season just to see how Delly goes, to see whether he can cope with the NBL. Because
the NBL's not a fast-paced game. I think he'll be okay.
It was just his lack of being able to do it. Like, he'd bring the ball up and then do these little handoffs to nobody and then go and stand somewhere and watch four people try and create. It's like, I really thought he'd have one last big run in him, a little bit like Mills did, where he just, you know, just burn himself out to try and get somewhere, but he just had nothing left.
Nah. But by the contrary, I mean, Dante Exum went from, you know, probably out of the league to maybe not out of the league. I mean, I don't think he hasn't had an offer at press time, but
I've said it like a million times, I'd love to see him play on Denver because he's north-south. Like, that was the thing Australia really needed was the fact that he could actually get to the rim and force the D to collapse on him. Yeah,
some of his drives were really cool. It was like watching him in his early time, like not the first season with Utah because he was injured for most of that, but in that second season where he flashed for a while and he strung some games together.
And probably the most encouraging thing was the fact that he got some hard hits.
He got smashed. Like, he looks like he's carrying a little bit more beef than he. I originally thought it was because he was a bit out of shape, but he was blowing in those early games. But he looked like, you know, that could be his. You know, a bit like
might need to mature into a bit stronger and those bumps won't hurt him as much.
A bit like Doncic and Jokic, it's probably not too bad to have a bit of padding. If you're going to play a game where you're going to go bouncing off people, you know, being skin and bones is not probably the and you're going to go bouncing off the floor, why the fuck not?
I'd love to see him with Jokic playing like almost like that reverse pick and roll where, you know, he's rolling to the rim, you know, that hard cutting, just fucking getting up there. Like, the dude's definitely talented. Just got to stay on the court for a season, man.
Yeah, I'd like to see him at the Warriors. just because I like to see players at the Warriors because yeah, that means they normally win shit.
Because they're your side now.
Yeah, apparently. Apparently that's my basketball team. It's fucking glorious. It was interesting because I did see a story from I heard about a story that Anthony Slater wrote on The Athletic because he talked about it on a podcast where he was talking to Joe Lacob up the back of the introductory press conference for Kuminga and so forth. And the chat went on, and in the end, Lacob actually was happy to go on the record and say, look, they are ridiculously hyped about the draft picks they've made, and they can't believe that Kuminga fell to them. And the other guy who fucking Perk can't pronounce also fell to them as well. I don't know whether that's just usually it's Bob Myers' job to sell teams on the idea that we're not looking to trade. These people are meant to stay here. Yeah. But Joe Lacob seems to be part of the game as well. They seem to think they've got enough stuff that this is, you know, this is what they're going to war with.
So shall we pivot to the Sixers, who dragged their star player, you know, their coach and their other star players?
Yeah, basically just put him out, just stuck him out on Hard Rubbish Weekend, just stuck him out on the fucking, on the street front with a sign on saying, free you a good home, along with an old fucking pair of deck chairs and a couch that had been on the balcony for 3 weeks and an old mole that hasn't started since 1982. I said, you know, fuck this guy, you know, get him out of here. And there weren't any takers. And then someone interviews Ben Simmons and asks him about his opportunities. He's like, yeah, you know. Portland wouldn't be a bad place to go, and there's other places. And the entire world just goes, how dare you? That's disrespectful. And they're like, literally, the team was saying, we've got to get this guy out of here. It's just such a fucking hypocrisy that what the team can do one thing, but the player can't even have any agency about his existence, essentially. But you said about Denver being a good spot for Exum. I've heard Denver floated gently as a spot for Simmons. And, I mean, there's a lot of places that would work for Simmons, but that would be a good place to work for Simmons.
Anywhere with a coach that isn't fucking – I just don't know whether he's really had a good coach. I don't think Doc Rivers is a very good coach. I think Doc Rivers is a good motivator for players that he likes. But
I think he's a Mel Meninga style, excellent motivator, needs some good people around him.
We were trying to think who would be a good coach, an NBA coach for – the boomers, considering it's literally what a
well, you got to figure out who the boomers listen to. Alan Jones.
Okay, Bernie.
What? Facts
very
only.
Funny.
Sky News.
Sky News. Yeah.
That guy from the castle who appears in all the all the shows
probably Facebook, to be honest. Just Facebook videos. Just run a Facebook video in timeouts.
I mean, it's a shit job being an international coach in any sport, particularly in basketball, because, you know, how much? It's a part-time job, and then for a couple of weeks every 4 years, you're the biggest fucking idiot in the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even Pop, a guy whose coaching CV should be absolutely unimpeachable, has been derided and misguided and smashed to the ground. And fair enough, too, because he's been toilet.
The funny thing with coaching the Australian side is it's like a four-year, group chat build-up, because you're not always going to have everyone there all the time, but you sort of roughly know what your side's going to be in 4 years. Or it's not like the US team where you've got – like there's if you said name the next US Olympic side and you got 50% of it right, then you'd fucking be the luckiest person in the world, wouldn't you? Whereas you could probably map out the starting five plus two reserves of what the Australian team's going to be in the next Olympics.
You don't know who's going to emerge, but the thing is that the talent pool's not so deep that you can sort of say that there's going to be someone else pops along in that sort of period.
Yeah. Well, and that probably is what we need. You know, you need Green to pop or one of those other guys to pop.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because Joe Ingles is probably going to have found the cliff at the end. He'll be approaching the Kyle Korver stage.
Yeah,
before too long. I did hear that.
He looks.
Who was shopping? Someone was shopping. It might have been Marcus Thompson or one of the guys on that podcast was shopping the idea of the Warriors going after Joe Ingles because he's. He's expiring, and I don't mean literally. I mean his contract is expiring. It's not that out of breath.
And, he's not that bad.
And you could argue that the Jazz probably could do with more athleticism in their guard spots.
Yeah.
Whereas with particularly with Bogdanović and Ingles, you've got essentially the same dude wombling about. So one of them could probably do with going somewhere else. And that kind of veteran savvy and sledging of Paul George would be fantastic at the Dubs. But I haven't heard it being proposed anywhere else except on their podcast.
He'd be great in that Iggy role, I think. I think that's the perfect sort of Iggy role. Can run a little bit of secondary play action with the, you know, off the ball, knockdown shots, smart player in defense, you know, not super athletic, but still smart.
I'm just here for Joe Ingles continuing to give the Clippers the shits forever for having waived him. Just for the rest of his career, just giving the Clippers the fucking shivering shits.
I'm just keen for Tybal to go back into the NBA next year and turn into
just the most Australian man in the world, and wearing an Akubra hat, like, again, our motorsport correspondent, for absolutely no fucking reason. Just wearing an Akubra, one of the guys, sort of guys who wears an Akubra hat and a fucking shucks tooth necklace, and just going around going, calling people mate.
Yep.
Having a dart on the go. Speaking of the Clippers, though, what the fuck is Kawhi? Was Kawhi up to with him and his bung ACL opting out? It just seemed like that decision just felt like it was all about him trying to head fake people into thinking that he thinks his ACL is okay.
No, I think I saw somewhere that if he takes a 1+1 after this year. So even though
he lines himself up for the 5-year max in the rehab,
and maybe
he gets that
5-year max, but
in his maximum earning capability. But you would think he is absolutely taking the piss in terms of what the Clippers traded to get him. But he clearly does not give a shit. But it's kind of, if you wanted to send a single signal that you believe, because the thing is that nobody has his medical data really. And if you wanted to send a signal that you said, look, I have absolute confidence that I'm going to come back from this ACL. Tear, Nick, boo-boo, whatever. It's not been defined even what was done to it, just that he had a procedure on his ACL. We don't know whether it was torn off the bone or whether he had a little bit of a tweak to it. But if you wanted to send a signal that, like, I have absolute confidence in my ACL, opting out is probably that signal to send because you're saying, look, I have absolute confidence that I'm going to come back, that I'm going to make my money back. But it could be interesting if it's actually a bluff.
Do you know who the only team left in the league with cap space is? That, like, if the Clips didn't sign him, who could just sign him outright to a deal? San Antonio Spurs. Because the Knicks have got no.
I was going to say, Knicks cap space. Let's be honest. The Knicks cap space only exists in order for other teams, other players to get leverage. You know, the Knicks cap space only exists for Chris Paul to get $120 million out of the fucking Suns. Yeah. Because without it, Chris Paul isn't getting $120 million out of the Suns. If it wasn't for the assist Larry that was too. Played. Yeah. All these guys got paid because of the Knicks hoarding all that cap space. So we did find out there was actually a purpose to the Knicks hoarding all that cap space.
Yeah, and then they gave it to Derrick Rose and
New Orleans Noel.
Fournier.
Fournier. And a little bit for Kemba Walker and Kemba Walker's knees. And we should pour a bit out for Kemba Walker's knees because Kemba Walker's knees are about to meet their ultimate destroyer, Tibbs' coaching methods.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know whether that's going to go well. But anyway, we'll see. Talk to me about how long has Rossi been like?
Do you remember 1996?
So this was what I was wondering about. Did he ride against which of the great Australian riders did he ride against?
So he just missed Mick Doohan because Mick Doohan's career-ending crash was early in 99, and Rossi basically took over Doohan's team and Doohan's mechanics. So Rossi's gone through almost all of his career with Doohan's guys. Like, he had Doohan's crew chief. He had Aussies and New Zealanders around him pretty much all the way through his career. But yeah, he basically stepped into Doohan's crew when Doohan retired. So he never actually got to race against Doohan, but he raced against a bunch of guys who, you know, he beat, you know, Kenny Roberts Jr. and he beat Doohan's old teammate Creville and he Caparossi and all that generation of the 90s. Yeah. Then he beat the generation of the 2000s, Cesar Gibbonauers and the fucking Nicky Haydens and all that sort of stuff. And he beat Casey Stoner and he beat fucking Jorge Lorenzo, never. Unfortunately, he was a bit too old by the time Mark Marquez came along, and he couldn't quite get on top of him.
It's still amazing. It's like a Slater, LeBron. You know, there's just every now and again, there's these guys that just don't seem to fit the rules of the sport.
Yeah,
because
it's probably more
motorbike riding is a long term sort of gig.
No, because most of these guys have like 10-year careers. I mean, if you look at McDowell's career, it was basically, his top line career was 1989 to 1999. Yeah, look at Wayne Rainey was particularly in that 1980s era, when the bikes were so vicious they would spit you down the road. You'd end up every one of them finished their career injured. Like Wayne Rainey ended up in a fucking wheelchair, and Kevin Schwantz just was too badly injured, and Mick Doohan was too badly injured. And Wayne Gardner's career had been longer because he started in the very early 1980s, but his career was effectively like 1983 to 1992 sort of thing. So they only had 10-year careers. Rossi, partly because the bikes became a little bit more docile, they kind of fiddle around. But in the 500cc era, when they were these violent two-strokes, they played around with the firing order, and they also, when they switched to unleaded fuel instead of leaded fuel, it kind of calmed them down a little bit, so they become a little bit less likely to throw you down the road and land you on your fucking head.
At huge speeds.
Yeah, well, the thing is that the violent high side was the characteristic accident of 80s and 90s MotoGP, 400cc Grand Prix racing, where you gas it up out of the corner, the back end slides and then catches and just spits you over the high side, and you go somersaulting at vast speed, often landing on your head. That's bad. But also the advent of when the four-strokes came in, traction control and engine maps and things to dampen down the revs early on in the rev range. I talk about this, and as I say this, literally I have the MotoGP practice on, and Miguel Oliveira has just high-sided off his KTM in a way that would have looked totally not out of place in 1989. These bikes don't spit you over the high side the same kind of way. It's much more often a front-end lose now because you're pushing as hard as you can on the edge of grip. It's not that the throttle will overcome the grip. But, yeah, so it became more likely that you could have a long career because you were much less likely to have a career-ending accident 10 years into your career. But that's not to say Rossi's longevity isn't absolutely astounding. I mean, he has been a factor for more than half of my life. And given that he's a 70s kid, I know he's born in 79. He's the last of that generation. You know, even someone like Fernando Alonso, who turned 40, obviously he's an 80s kid, so I don't quite have the same allegiance to him. But I have to admit, I've been having a bit of a we knew Rossi was probably going to retire this year because he's been way off the pace and he's sucked really, and he wants to move on. He's settling down. He's got a missus. He's got interest. He's got his own team. He's got interest in going off and going sports car racing. Taking his team, his privateer team, to try and see if they can go get in the Le Mans 24 Hour as a G team. He's washed up.
I was just about to say if COVID didn't exist, you know, he'd be the sort of guy that they would try and get to Bathurst or try and get to Le Mans.
With Le Mans, they're very selective about who they invite. So he'll have to earn his way in there, but he'll probably earn his way in there by his team running in the European Le Mans series and winning the championship and getting an invite. But he's going to – there's been some suggestion that because Ferrari are coming into the top class of sports cars to try and win the Le Mans 24 Hours, they're like, oh, Ray of Rossi will race for them. No, they want guys who are as fast as Formula One drivers. And Rossi was probably a second off the pace of a Formula One driver 15 years ago because he did test for Ferrari. And there was some suggestion that when Schumacher retired in 06, that Rossi might jump into that seat and learn his way up and try and win a Formula One championship. But he just, I think he knew that he was never going to be quite on the pace because you might be the best in the world at one thing, but a related skill that uses some of the same skill base isn't necessarily something you can be best in the world at.
Yeah. Well,
but the thing about the thing about Rossi was that he had, I'm talking about like he's dead, but the reason he transcended his sport and became the Michael Jordan or the Muhammad Ali or whatever. Kelly Slater is a good example because of the longevity, but he was the one guy in that sport who everybody knew, was his personality. He had so much fucking, he just leapt out of the fucking TV screen at you. And it's going to be, and there was a genuine concern a couple of years ago that MotoGP, you know, when Rossi retired, MotoGP would just go into a complete slump.
He would just fall off
I don't think that's going to be the case because they've got some compelling stars and they had and for the last 5 years or so, I mean, Rossi has essentially been, you know, a non-factor in terms of winning regularly. It's had a chance for other stars to come through. So, but he's going to be missed. He's going to be missed badly.
I think the NBA had a genuine problem with that. Like that they thought they were going to have a genuine problem with that. And then they've had Luka turn up and Giannis just, you know, go Hulk and change the league. And
it's still going to be interesting to see how it goes when they get post LeBron though. Because
yeah, it will.
Just like it was, there was a good couple of years where it was a solid dip after Jordan. And then Kobe and Shaq kind of picked it up from there. But Kobe and Shaq were not, I don't feel like that Lakers team was as universally, it wasn't kind of a neutral's favorite the way that perhaps that Bulls team was.
Yeah.
So it's been bad for the old people, along with Leo Messi not being able to sign a contract with Barcelona and having to go and fuck off somewhere else to play.
What is the go there? Is that simply they don't want him anymore?
No. Barcelona would like to sign Lionel Messi, and Lionel Messi would like to sign for Barcelona. But La Liga, as part of a sustainability drive, has brought in a salary cap.
Oh,
Barcelona
right.
are so far over it, it's not funny. Because the salary cap was set at proportional to revenue. And back when La Liga was just pre-COVID, they just signed people for stupid money. That was all fine. Now the salary cap's in, and it's impossible to get to re-sign Leo Messi. What they were hoping to do was ship off some of their other players, but all the other clubs in Europe went, nah, we're not taking any of those other players. We want to see what happens when you have to fucking let Leo Messi go, because Messi's contract had run down, so he's effectively a free agent. The disappointing thing is that he's probably going to end up at PSG because they're literally the only club in Europe who can afford to pay him the money that he's on. So it's going to be, he's going to go and have effectively a load management season where he plays against a bunch of fucking farmers for most of the time. Having said that, PSG lost the French league last year to Lille, who are a bunch of coal miners from the top north of France. And then they're going to play a handful of actually important games in the Champions League, and then they'll lose in the second round like they always fucking do.
Yeah, it'd be nice to, no Premier League side can afford him.
The only one that could would have been maybe Chelsea or maybe Man City, but they've already played huge amounts of money. I mean, Man City have signed Jack Grealish, and they're signing Harry Kane. So, and because they've got that English premium, they're paying huge amounts of money because those guys are under contract, so they've got to pay a transfer fee as well. Chelsea have spent huge amounts of money as well. So it's kind of, it's not a, I mean, Chelsea are trying, have offered $130 million to get Romelu Lukaku back from Inter in Italy. And there's just, I don't know whether Messi's availability might come too late in the piece. But the thing is, Messi would quite like to go and play at PSG, I think, because there's quite a lot of old Barca guys there. There's like Neymar is there and a bunch of old washed people, because it's a retirement home, really, funded by the Qatari government and beIN Sports.
All right. Well, that's depressing. We really haven't nailed this ending on a positive note thing, have we?
Well, let's say shouts to the Matildas, because they did a fantastic job.
Yeah, and I think my boys, that's probably that extra time game's probably the most enjoyment they've had watching the Olympics, because they watched the US-Australia game in third quarter, like, we're not going to win, are we? I'm like, no, we're not.
No, we're not going to get this.
So then they wandered off and did something else.
Well, the thing about the Tillies was interesting was that in that third-fourth playoff against the Seppos, and it's obnoxious having to watch the Seppos win anything, but it's clear that Sam Kerr and her Chelsea teammate on the Americans are, as they say on the gossip pages, an item.
Yes.
And it's going to be really interesting to see how that is covered. I mean, I know there's probably elements of that in AFLW and netball, but this is a much bigger stage. It's like, what's the fucking, if you're friends with somebody, friends, and then you get on the field and then you just want to beat them. You want to grind them into the fucking dirt. You want to destroy them. And then you want to have a beer with them afterwards. If it's your romantic partner though.
Yeah.
How does that work? I mean, you played a bit of mixed touch. I mean, I don't know whether you've played a lot with Ness, but that's going to be a really interesting dynamic. And I'm not saying this to be kind of titillating and, oh, it's lesbians and all this stuff. I'm genuinely interested in that sort of thing, because one day in the next 5, 10, 20, 50 years, we're going to have this discussion about all dude sports. So it probably happens and we never see it, but it's going to happen. I'm interested to see how that dynamic plays out and how it impacts how you play the game?
In mixed, because mixed is sort of seen as a slight second tier to open men's and open women's, you tend to get like really good players. Might like one might play for Queensland, one might play for New South Wales. Actually, that's happened quite a bit. But in the men's, and usually they're both in the men's and the women's, not in the mixed. And then all the elite mixed tends to be carnival mixed, where you get to pick your own sides. So all the partners play together. You know, right. Very, very, very rarely would you see like a high profile touch couple
that would almost playing be funnier against each other, because they're more likely to fucking. They're more likely to just rip the shit out of each other if things go wrong. Yeah. They're just having remonstrating in the back line as the other team go in under the post.
There was one, yeah. It's very, very unusual to see really good male and females play against each other at that level. You know, normally they're in men's and women's. So, which I think's like, I still claim touch is fucking stupid. If they wanted to get into the Olympics or the Commonwealth Games, they absolutely should be putting, like, stacking their best players in mixed and trying to say, you know, we are one of the few sports that genuinely have all their elite players from both sexes playing the same game. But it's just, there's a cultural problem there, you know. It's always been that way, that men's and women's are the top tier and mixed is slightly below it. So, yeah, what are you going
to
do?
Well, I just Googled, because I didn't want to just call her that American woman. The American is Christy Mewis. But if you Google Sam Kerr girlfriend, she's got a long-term girlfriend. Now, I don't know whether things went wrong and I haven't actually done enough research. It's probably true. But, anyway, a bit of cheek titillation, which is a much better way to finish the podcast.
There was something that said if you follow both of their Instagram accounts, they've been flirting with each other for the last 6 months. So,
Yes.
The signs were there. The signs were there.
And I think Mewis is a Chelsea player, but I'm not sure. I haven't checked my facts. I'm unlikely to, because I can't be fucking arsed.
So anyway, that's it for this week of Who Weekly, the podcast. We'll see you next time.
Cheers, folks.
See ya.
Gary has absolutely no idea what has happened to it. Still doesn't know.
Funny. All right, I'm going to go get a whiskey.
That's a better ending than whatever we had before.
Yes. We did get some very funny music jokes this week in our...
On Twitter. Yes. Is anybody still listening to this podcast? Yes, I mainly listen to the music.
Music. I was not in the mood for fucking Bernie's boomer jokes though. Halfway through that game, it's like, just fuck off and leave me alone. Don't want.
No, that wasn't really the look we were looking for. Yeah,
it's
well,
a bit unrelenting sometimes.
It's a children's game played for money by adults.
Yeah, like that. That's the Olympics. Yeah.
No, it's a children's game. Profiteered off by terrible people, and good old Brisbane gets to be the next sucker who goes broke, trying to support I heard some ridiculous stat about the last place to turn a profit running in Olympics, and it was LA. It was a long time ago. I mean, Sydney got a lot out of it. It got a lot of infrastructure that it still uses and all that sort of stuff, but it was a fucking nightmare. And it sent
part of Brisbane's pitch was actually, we won't go and build a whole heap of new infrastructure.
That's the thing I didn't understand about the Brisbane. So the Gabba's going to be the Olympic Stadium. Yeah, is that the idea?
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, where else are you going to do it? You're not going to make QE2 in an Olympic Stadium, because QE2 was originally built for the Commie Games, wasn't it? And that was the point of the QE2, was that it was the athletics track that was for the Commie Games. It's handy to wheel Matilda around in. And presumably they're going to do the swimming at Chandler, and they're going to do the cycling at Chandler, and they'll do the tennis at the fucking tennis center. And do they have tennis?
I think that was their, like, that is the new Olympics, is that you have to be able to
do it sustainably,
show that you have the infrastructure to host it, not the other way around. Like, you know, before you used to have to say, well, we're going to build a whole heap of new shit.
Yeah, not and the like, not the South African World Cup bid kind of, or the basically Rio. I mean, Rio's World Cup and Olympics double act has just fucked Brazil completely. They've got a huge amount of totally abandoned infrastructure as a result of that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's funny how shit changes, eh?
Well, like, it's not because it's not because it's uneconomic. It's because they don't want to be seen to be wasteful. But I don't
know. Yeah, I guess they're trying to get rid of that rep of we come in and fuck up an economy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And FIFA doesn't seem to be bothered about that at all.
Mm.
Although once you get past Qatar, I mean, they had those two World Cups that are in fucked places. They had Russia, which is fucked because of governmental reasons. I mean, there was, I'm sure the stadiums they build will get used. And then Qatar, which is just a totally pointless, just jerking off in the desert kind of exercise. But then they're going to Mexico, US, and Canada, which is, you know, cool. I haven't been to those places in ages. They've got lots of stadiums already. That's exactly the kind of thing you're talking about. All the infrastructure is there. All you have to do is rock up and it'll be an excellent place to hold a World Cup.
Hey, I forgot to talk about it in the SPOD, the sports pod.
The SPOD. Wasn't SPOD like a terrible fucking DJ in the early 2000s? Tried to battle with Kwan during the boy in the band of the bubble thing.
What's the go with Vettel turning into, is it Vettel? Who's the Formula One driver that's basically waging a one-man gay war against
a one-man gay war? To be fair, Lewis and Seb as the fucking elder statesmen of Formula One, because they had the Formula One Grand Prix in Hungary where they're trying to do some massive fucking bigotry in their legal through legislation, and Lewis came out with a statement, you know, clearly written by him, because it was, you know, what I like about Lewis is that he does his own socials, and you can tell because they're slightly incoherent, but they're clearly heartfelt. And he's basically just coming out against this fucking anti-gay bill and, you know, love is love and all that sort of stuff. And Sam is like, yep, I'm with you, and I'm fucking going to W you because I'm going to turn up on the fucking main straight before the race when the anthem's being sung in the biggest pride shirt imaginable that just says same love. Yep. He got fined for it because he kept it on during the anthem, which is kind of a fuck you to the host country, because they have this – they have this thing called the gesture or the moment whereby everyone can wear their political activity kind of shirts and things, and everyone can take the knee or put the fist in the air or whatever they want to do. But because it's so regimented, it's like, this is the time you do your protest and then we all respect the anthem. It's like, it's not a protest if it's fucking scheduled.
Yeah.
If it's become a corporate moment that has sponsorship, then it's not a protest.
Yeah, I just thought it was really interesting that because there's all these bratty guys that are sort of seen as these brats, and they're like, oh, actually, you know,
we the thing is that
mature.
Vettel was all, I mean, Vettel's old now, but Vettel was always a bit more of a, had a little bit. In Australia, we always saw him as the foil to Mark Webber and the reason Webber was being held back by the team and all that sort of stuff, which wasn't really fair on Vettel. Because he's actually even as a young bloke, he was actually a really interesting dude. He was massively into old British comedies like Fawlty Towers and Monty Python. Like, he's got a very English sense of humour. And he's into old motorbikes. Like, he rebuilds old motorbikes in his spare time. Massive Nigel Mansell fan, which is why he carries number 5. And in fact, he owns Mansell's 92 championship-winning Williams. He actually has that in his shed. So he's kind of a bit of a tinkerer and a bit of a shed dude and a bit of a his sense of right and wrong and his politics appear to be bang on, you know, in terms of he just stands up for a lot of things that self-interested young blokes wouldn't necessarily put their necks on the line for. I mean, you can do that when you're a four-time world champion and you've got nothing else to prove and you've earned millions of dollars. But he's always been – he's very private, and he's genuinely just been a decent dude, Vettel, which is kind of – difficult to say in the Australian context because he was always the bad guy when Webber was being screwed over. But that was entirely a Red Bull thing, Red Bull team, because Christian Horner and Helmut Marko are absolute fucking flutes. And they've always been absolute flutes. The way they've carried on after the crash between Hamilton and Verstappen at Silverstone, where Hamilton went for a gap. It was mostly his fault, but it was really mostly a racing incident. Verstappen went off, crashed, and then they're basically saying Hamilton should be banned for the rest of the year and a whole lot of ridiculous over-the-top bullshit. And they launched a protest trying to get Hamilton's... Because Hamilton got penalised in the race. He got a 10-second penalty, but he happened to overcome it because he's in a Mercedes. They're awfully quick. It was just kind of, it's just so pathetic. And they managed to completely shoot themselves in the foot because they had the upper the higher ground. They had the fucking PR win and they totally lost it by being absolute petulant children. And then the race afterwards, they got taken out and everybody laughed. And it was fucking hilarious because Hamilton's teammate fucked up braking into the first turn in the wet and just wiped out the entire Red Bull team.
Yeah.
And then they tried to suggest that was on purpose.
It's weird the corporate fuckery influencing how you think about the driver, hey?
Yeah. Well, also, you know, the people you associate yourself with. I mean, that's true in all sports. I mean, you know, how many – there's probably good people who've played for Manly, but we always think they're cunts because they played for Manly.
That's true.
I can't think of any. I'll probably never think of any. Steve Menzies, maybe? I think he was all right. Being for Menzies, he was an all right dude. Just happened to play for Manly his whole life, which is like being born with a congenital disease.
Lions. Cliffy Lions.
Cliffy Lions, he was a good dude. Cliffy Lions, yeah.
He wasn't
a nice player, but he was he had a fantastic jerry curl, fantastic perm mullet. If we're talking about Cliffy Lions, it's probably time to pull the plug.
Time to go. All right, Doc, I'll catch you later.
Good night to you and to you, listener. How did we get to Cliffy Lions?